7:08 in the morning. You're listening to Upfront. I'm Kat Brooks.
And I'm Brian Edwards-Tieker. We're going to start with transnational news this morning. When Donald Trump initially said he was intending to start slapping tariffs on imported Mexican goods, a lot of people in the chattering classes in Washington, D.C. thought he was just blowing off steam. But yesterday, comments he made in London, he doubled down. The administration apparently intends to start charging a 5% tariff on anything that comes into the country from across the Mexican border, starting Monday, and ratchet that up to a 25% tariff on October 1st. Analysis just came out from a consulting firm in Texas that does economic forecasts, the Perryman Group. They estimate 117,000 jobs will be lost as a consequence, about 50,000 of them in California, principally in retail, because the tariffs will mean higher prices, will mean less consumption. Joining us to talk about what the tariffs would actually do on both sides of the border is someone who's been studying the impact of the North American Free Trade Agreement for many years. Mark Weisbrot is co-director of the Center for Economic and Policy Research. Good morning.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
So you've authored a number of reports super critical of NAFTA, suggesting overall that they've been incredibly bad for Mexico's economy. I guess the big question is, what's the consequence of unringing the bell now that you have all these companies with supply chains that stretch across the border?
Well, the tariff won't unring it altogether because, first of all, it starts with 5%, so that's not huge. It will have an impact, though, on the Mexican economy. And, of course, and it has more impact even than you would expect from the tariff itself, because one of the changes that Mexico made that was part of the whole package of reforms that began in the 1980s and was consolidated with NAFTA into this international treaty, which was one of the main purposes of the of NAFTA, was to get all these changes into a treaty like that so they'd be harder to reverse. And one of them is this: Mexico has this hypermobile capital. In other words, you can trade foreign exchange, you can trade the peso even on the weekend. And so it's very easy to get money out of there. And so people do it very quickly when bad things happen. The peso has fallen, I think, about 3% as of yesterday since this announcement. And, of course, it can fall a lot more. And, you know, just to give you an idea how bad this is for them financially, in 2013, when the Federal Reserve in the United States decided to taper its quantitative easing, that means they stopped. They didn't stop buying bonds, but they just announced that they were going to slow down the process of buying U.S. Treasury bonds. In other words, they weren't going to lower long-term interest rates at the same pace that they were doing. Mexico got hit very hard by that. It really slowed their rate of growth that year. It really slowed the economy very badly. So that's something that, you know, most countries in the world weren't affected by, but because it's so fast, so easy to take money out of Mexico as compared to most countries, they get hit right away when there's any kind of trouble in the global economy, not just their own.
So they get the worst of both worlds. They get the impacts on their export market from the tariffs, but they have all the vulnerability to capital flight that comes with a free trade regime.
That's right. They have more vulnerability than any country I can think of in this hemisphere.
What would that actually look like? Are we talking about like electronics companies just packing up their maquilas and moving them to Vietnam?
No, the mobility I'm talking about is portfolio. So it's basically, maybe, you know, you could remember the 1995 peso crisis where your currency crashes, that causes inflation. Then the central bank, which is very conservative, responds to that by raising interest rates, both to protect the currency and to lower inflation. And you'd get, you know, you can very easily, like in 95, they got a huge recession out of it. So I'm not saying all that's going to happen right now, but that's something that Mexico has to worry about. And that's why you see AMLO more worried about this than he would be if it was just the tariff itself. You know, the 5% isn't going to do that much of them right away, but it's the whole economy that gets hit. And they so that's something that is making him concede already. He's already, you know, in the last couple of months, they have stepped up deportations at their southern border. And so that's, he's trying to appease Trump as much as he can.
I'm Andres Manuel Lopez Obrador. He's the recently elected president of Mexico and the first person from the country's center left to hold that position in a generation. Mark Weisbrot, what about the impact on the U.S. side of the border of the tariffs? Ultimately, they're a tax that's paid by U.S. consumers.
Yeah, that's not going to be very much for the U.S. economy. It's, you know, it's just not big enough relative to this economy. So, you know, you will get some price increases. It'll be like a tax, but it's just not that big because it's just one country's trade. But I think that, oh, of course, it gets up to 25%. It'd be significant, but it's not the thing that, it's not something that most people here are going to notice. I think the other thing, though, is you know, there isn't anything resembling an immigration crisis. And I actually just got something in the New Republic today about this, looking at the data, because the Custom and Border Protection here has monthly data, and you can look at what they call apprehensions and inadmissible. So that's everybody who's trying to get in, that they find, who's trying to get into the U.S. without authorization. And so you have that monthly data, and you can look at it, and you can see that for the last 5 years, this number has actually fallen. And in fact, in 2017, it hit a nearly half century low. For 50 years, it hadn't been that low. And then it went up in 2018, but it's still, you know, well below the amount in 2014. And this is the only data we have, really. This isn't like I'm cherry picking something. You know, this is what we have from the government for who's trying, you know, what kind of illegal immigration there is, or even people seeking asylum are included in this as well. So the only thing they have is that the last 3 months there's been a jump, and that's a significant jump. But it's just 3 months, so we don't know why this is. You know, there's a whole lot of reasons that researchers have put forward, but 3 months is not a trend. Even if it goes, it went from an average of like 60,000 to 96,000 a month. Still way, way below, you know, a small fraction of what we used to have, say, in the 2000s.
But we're really clear that the Trump administration has never been rational or logical about their fears of immigration, so I'm not surprised.
No, but you do have a lot of, I mean, if you're just a casual reader of the media, you would think that there really is, you wouldn't necessarily call it a border crisis, but you would think that there is a massive, you know, increase in immigration. And again, there is something going on for the last 3 months, but that's really far from any kind of real increase, you know, long-term trend or something that, you know, the government would want to respond to in some way.
Mark Weisbrot, I actually want to go back to what you said about there not being impact on the American side of the border. Senator Ted Cruz calls the proposed tariffs a $30 billion tax increase on Texans. The GOP has sent a strong warning back to the White House that they don't support these tariffs, that there are several states, including California and Arizona, that will be impacted. And the stock market did see an impact just yesterday.
Well, the stock market, you know, does what it wants. I mean, that's not really that much of a measure. Obviously, there are companies that are going to lose money. And so, and the stock market, you know, the stock market is responding to a whole lot of things. But one thing that it is responding to is Trump's erratic behavior and the tariffs, the fight he's having with China. Now you have Mexico. You don't know what the next one's going to be. So, yeah, you can say that the uncertainty that's caused by his just using tariffs as a distraction from whatever he wants to distract from at any moment, that's significant, and that does affect the world economy. I would say that's significant. But I don't know where he gets the $30 billion figure. I mean, that isn't you know, I would have to look at that. But it's not going to affect, it's not going to make a dent in the Texas economy that anybody's going to feel. It'll be, I mean, we have tax increases. You know, we had a huge tax cut, for example, and nobody really noticed that. It did influence the economy. This isn't anything like the size of that.
Mark Weisbrot, thank you very much for speaking to us.
Sure, thank you.
Mark Weisbrot is co-director of the Center for Economic and Policy Research. And since he identified the principal likely impacts of a new tariff regime as being inside Mexico, not inside the United States, I thought we'd go next to Laura Carlson. She's director of the Americas Program of the Center for International Policy. Most of the time, she's based in Mexico City. This morning, she's joining us from Oregon. Good morning.
Good morning.
So the government of Andrés Manuel López Obrador has been racing to put some kind of proffer on the table that would let the Trump administration claim Mexico has responded to its demand to halt the flow of migrants across the border. I want to get into what the Mexican government is doing, but first kind of start with the politics. Like, what are they worried about? Why are they trying so hard to play ball with Trump?
Mexico has always been worried about precisely the factor that Mark mentioned just a moment ago, and that's the uncertainty. What happens is that the markets respond to these kinds of signals, which is the potential trade war, which is the impact of tariffs, and particularly the foreign investment prospects for Mexico. The markets respond, the peso is affected, and these are the types of factors that are completely out of the control of the new Mexican government that could really throw a monkey wrench in its plans to reform the economy and the society. The government of Andrés Manuel López Obrador has very ambitious plans to move away from neoliberalism. That's not exactly clear to what degree or how, but to move away from neoliberalism and begin a number of social programs that will reduce inequality and provide support for some of the most excluded sectors up to now. Their fear is that these macroeconomic factors can heavily affect their ability to carry out these programs. That's why they're walking on eggs in this negotiation. On the one hand, they want to defend their model of looking at immigration from a different perspective, a less criminalizing and punitive model of dealing with migratory flows, which are reality around the world. And on the other hand, they are afraid of what Donald Trump can dish out because of the high degree of dependency of the Mexican economy on the U.S. economy.
So Mexico's done a lot to deal with migrant flows already. It started issuing these 90-day visas to Central American migrants crossing through Mexico. It is coordinated with the Trump administration to try to divert some people headed towards the United States. Do they know how much more Trump wants them to do?
No, they absolutely don't know, because the way it's phrased in the formal statement is that when Mexico takes effective actions that will be determined by our sole criteria and judgment, the tariffs will be removed. So the Trump administration's sole criteria and judgment are the formal measure in this international relationship that's critical to both countries of whether Mexico gets hit with a tariff increase or not. That's extremely vague, to say the least. At the same time, they're dealing with a model of immigration that's contrary to what the stated values are of the Mexican government. Unfortunately, there's been a significant gap or contradiction even between what the Mexican government is saying about going to the root causes, alleviating the factors that force people to flee, especially from those top three Central American countries, Honduras, Guatemala, and El Salvador, and figuring out some long-term solutions that are humane and do not violate human rights, and what their practice has been on the ground. Just since January, we've seen deportations from Mexico back to Central America double. since the time when Trump threatened to close the border, and pressure has been increasing from the U.S. government. We've seen an increase in detention, which wasn't a significant practice in Mexico before, an increase in raids, the continued militarization, especially of the southern border area and the border with Guatemala, and the elimination of humanitarian visas that would allow people to travel freely through Mexico. So there's been a virtual crackdown in Mexico in recent months that completely goes against what they're saying that they want to do in terms of immigration. And we have to take a special look at what we mean by controlling migratory flows. Are we saying that both countries should be doing all that they can to make sure that people don't leave Central America? There's a significant number of these people who are leaving Central American countries because of direct death threats. They've seen relatives assassinated. I've talked to many of them. I just got back from Tijuana, talking to people who'd been returned to Mexico under the Remain in Mexico plan and to shelter directors. I mean, if they were trapped and not allowed their legal right to flee, to seek asylum, to seek a safe place in another country, they could very well be murdered in the situations in which they find themselves. So that's not a real solution. And also we have to look at what the reality is of this migration. They're not unprecedented numbers, and it's not an unmanageable flow. It's unmanageable because Donald Trump is attempting to create a permanent crisis that will serve him during the 2020 elections.
What are the consequences politically inside Mexico? Is there a lot of sympathy for the Central American refugees? Is there an antipathy towards them?
There's both. Fortunately, since the model of immigration out of Central America changed, and so we have these larger groups, sometimes called caravans, often called exodus, here. Since that became a reality at the end of last year, it's strained local resources, and we find in some places in particular, depending a lot on the attitude of the local government, more xenophobic reactions than we had seen in the past. The historic reality has been a relatively welcoming attitude, especially on the part of the Mexican people, not so much on the government, because they've been collaborating with the United States government since at least 2014 in a big way to stop these flows, but on the part of the Mexican people, a recognition that these families, because now that's the other change, they're primarily families, are in need of a safe place, that they face many of the same situations, but more dire, as many people in Mexico face, and with a long history of immigration itself, you know, Mexicans understand that the push factors that cause a family to make such a drastic decision, given the conditions of migration through Mexico and into the United States. So we find both of that. On the part of the Mexican government, again, there's ambivalence between discourse and action that I mentioned before. And now in this context, there's the universal rejection of the bullying tactics of Donald Trump, and there's a concern about whether or not the Mexican government is going to cave to this more punitive model under economic pressure from the U.S. government. It says it won't, but we don't know what's going to happen.
If you read between the lines, it looks like what the xenophobe wing of the Trump administration wants is an arrangement wherein the United States can say, Mexico is a safe country for refugees. Therefore, if you've gotten to Mexico from Honduras, El Salvador, or Guatemala, we're not going to let you cross one more border into the United States. What consequences would that type of arrangement have in Mexico?
They've been explicit about wanting that ever since the middle of last year, almost a year ago. And when Kristen Nielsen was still there, she mentioned it. It's called a safe third country agreement. The difference between what we have now and that agreement is, as you say, these people are not allowed to request asylum in the United States. It's an agreement that exists in European countries and between Canada and the United States, but it would have nowhere near the impact that it would have if it were adopted between Mexico and the United States. Essentially, even with the Remain in Mexico program, which allows people to request asylum in the United States and then sends them back to wait in Mexico, sometimes up to a year, it's already straining resources on the Mexican border. And it's also a violation of national sovereignty. Mexico has nothing to do with the immigration policies or procedures of the United States and has no particular reason to accept asylum seekers from the United States back into Mexico. The government, again, accepted that under pressure from the United States, and it's already causing problems in these border towns because they're facing returned asylum seekers, they're facing Mexicans being deported, they're facing new migrants that are always coming up from Central America, and all these flows are collecting along the Mexican side of the border. If a safe third country agreement were to go into effect, that would dramatically increase the number of people who basically get stuck. It would increase the attempts at illegal crossings rather than going through the asylum-seeking procedures, which are completely legal even if it's not a port of entry, because they would prohibit, you know, seeking asylum. So we'd have a situation in which the major winners would be the human smugglers, who could then increase their prices because of the greater demand and difficulties in making it into the United States, where asylum seekers feel safer in many cases, where they have support systems of relatives, you know, where they feel that they're going to be able to have a better situation for their families. The Mexican government has said repeatedly that they will not accept this agreement, and that's why they accepted Remain in Mexico in some senses. It's been an agreement that hasn't worked in Europe. It's been challenged multiple times in the courts because it's a direct violation of asylum rights, and yet it would allow the Trump administration to essentially wash its hands of Central American migrants, many of whom are coming up as a result of U.S. policies historically in their own countries.
All right. Laura Carlson, that's all the time we have. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Laura Carlson is director of the Americas Program of the Center for International Policy.